Well, we want the action. Mr. Clark Brooks, the artist formerly known as SEC StatCat, but of course now he's on three. Expertise on transfer portal rankings, player rankings, quarterback rankings, list season in full kickoff here. How you doing, buddy?
Oh, it was a whirlwind of a January, like you just aforementioned, man. Like, I don't take it lightly. I literally have, I'm the only person on the planet that does exactly what I do, ranking every, ranking all the best college players in a weekly basis, you know, charting every offensive snap in the SEC, being the portal czar for, in my opinion, and a lot of people's opinions, sorry if I'm biased, but one of the best college sports brands out there. And now March Madness is going to come around. So yeah, I'm just really excited with how the schedule is kind of broken out this year. I was a little apprehensive, of course. When I was told, yeah, when the ruling came down, they're going to condense those transfer portal windows into a 1 15-day period as opposed to 2 30-day periods. And like, I can't imagine how these support staffs now do it to get their information all in a row and just be aggressive decision makers going after these players. Because from where I sit, it was like drinking from a fire hose this winter. But of course, love it. And I'm really excited with some of these additions and how it's going to affect the Power 2 this season.
Yeah. And so the main reason I wanted to have you on, Clark, you just posted for On3, a huge deep dive. Go check it out. I'll put a link in the show notes so people can follow along or go check it out after the conversation. But you're ranked the top 100 players in college football in 2026. I know you're eager to talk about some of the portal rankings that you nailed last season. So we got a lot to jump into here with a lot of the talent in the SEC in 2026. But I think perhaps more importantly, Clark, last time I had you on, we talked movies. And you said, go watch this Naked Gun. I haven't had Paramount, but I got Paramount because I wanted to watch Landman. And then I saw, oh, what do you know? Naked Gun. Clark told me to go check this movie out. And I laughed my ass off. I thought that was a hell of a good time. I particularly liked the O.J. Simpson joke. That was probably the highlight of the show.
Trailer. So if that still got you when it was in the trailer, that's good stuff. But I mean, excellent wordplay, dad joke galore. Like, I just am in love with that type of stuff. Of course, I'm a big fan of comedies, and yeah, we just do not have as many as we crave, and I'm just super glad that it met expectations, because that means we're probably going to get a little bit more, maybe not just exactly Naked Gun sequels, but more to slapstick, funny, lighthearted type of stuff, where it doesn't have to be a half horror movie or a half rom-com. It can just be straight funny from the get-go. And I'm very pleased that it hit your funny bone, because it definitely hit mine.
So then naturally I have to ask, since that time, and it's been a while, it's been several months, is there a movie or two that tops your list of Clark's new must-see?
You want to go see the new Anaconda? Haven't yet, but you know, Paul Rudd, Jack Black, sign me up. I've been more rewatching kind of streaming stuff. So The Paper, that is the offshoot of The Office, set in Toledo, Ohio. I find it fairly interesting that all these mockumentary shows are in the Rust Belt somewhere. You know, Pawnee, Indiana was made up, but Toledo, a declining metropolis. You know, Scranton, a declining metropolis. So very interesting to me to see where it happens. But I've been watching that. I think that has met expectations. Also with St. Denis, another one of these mockumentary shows, but this is in the Pacific Northwest. Just think of it as The Office in a hospital. I love the cast. It's one of those ensemble things where not one person is doing a lot of the heavy lifting. Kind of like The Paper, like you have your three or four select people who are really doing the heavy lifting, but St. Denis, much more of an ensemble cast. And spoiler alert, Steve Little, who you might know as Stevie from Eastbound and Down, he has a little bit of a cameo in it. So like, once he showed up, I'm like, oh, I'm glued, because I already liked it. I already felt the characters were really good. But I think it's nice, soft comedy. It's not necessarily a gut buster, but it's definitely one of those where you enjoy spending time with characters, and that's not worth nothing when you're spending a lot of time streaming these shows. It keeps you coming back, you know?
Oh man, reference to Eastbound and Down. You're speaking right to my heart. That's a top five comedy all time.
Oh my gosh. Like, so that came out freshman year when I was in college, and it's because baseball just has, you know, it's the rite of spring when things start to warm up. But yeah, like that and Brockmire, those two are like baseball types of shows. And instead of opening day, I prefer to watch that stuff to get me in the spring mood as opposed to watching my Reds probably disappoint. So, but yeah, big Eastbound and Down fan. Like, talk about dramedies, you know, where you're kind of meshing the two genres together. That was one of the first true shows like that I can remember liking and consuming. Because, like, yeah, I got into a Danny McBride Fist Foot way. I'm like, oh, how is this going to be? How taking on, you know, a fireballer like John, was it John Rocker? Who was the Braves guy who was,
oh yeah, John Rocker, for sure. Yeah.
I couldn't remember if that was his first name or not, but like that type of asshole and, you know, trying to make him an anti-hero, it was like really interesting. And of course, halfway through the season, a lot of the shows ended on bummer notes. They weren't happy. So like, you know, just the way you're consuming things, like, oh, this is very dramatic and this is kind of a tragedy more than a laugh out loud comedy. Don't get me wrong, lots of gut busting moments, but in terms of that, and you bring in Ashley Schaefer, like, this was when Will Ferrell was at the height of his powers. He comes in basically doing a Ric Flair used car salesman, and like, in my opinion, it's top three best characters he's ever done. Chaz Michaels also on that short list with Blades of Glory. I think the movie's kind of mid, but he himself as, you know, Chaz Michaels and he himself as Ashley Schaefer, two of my favorite people. And of course, both came out within a year of each other. So to digress, yes, big Eastbound and Down fan. I do love when it starts to warm up because it gets me in the mood to get some baseball content like that in Brockmire.
Okay, well, I think we've upset the boomers enough. Let's get down to business here. Now, I think if you would have told me, Clark, about 6-7 months ago that in 26, one of the best or arguably the best player in the Southeastern Conference was Dylan Stewart, I'd say, oh, I buy that. But things didn't go as planned there in Columbia. Yet, Mr. Clark Brooks has got Dylan Stewart, number 3 overall player in college football in 2026. Explain yourself.
Okay. So I think the part of the regression that we saw this last year was not having a second form of heat. Kyle Kennard was a fantastic find in the portal for them 2 years ago. And as we saw with Texas Tech this past season, Miami this past season, when you have 4 dudes, it's a lot harder to block than if you just have 1 dude. So nothing against South Carolina's offensive line, but it did just take – or defensive line, but it just took a little bit of a back step. And teams were able to hone in more on Stewart. And while he did have some fantastic plays, of course, that first half of the Oklahoma game, oh, my gosh, that's the stuff you crave and you think that he can reach his high-end potential game in, game out. That's the stuff you want to clock on. But I'm higher on him on people than Colin Simmons, who's been arguably one of the most productive underclassmen pass rushers each the last 2 years. It's because he's 6'6", 250 pounds. He's got that length. He's got that things you just cannot teach. And if everything comes together, his upside is just going to be tremendous. So like I mentioned, South Carolina did bring in some portal additions to take some heat off of him and to try and help maximize him. And because of that, I think he's going to be in for a big, big fall and a potential top 10 pick this time next year.
So a lot of that is potential, but in fairness, we have seen it.
Yeah. Like, he's a below average player and beating the guy against him. It's just he wasn't extraordinarily awesome like he was during his freshman season. And again, Colin Simmons, I hear this from Texas fans all the time. Like, why do you have him behind? It's just because the high-end potential, I just view Stew to be a little bit better. Even though, yes, almost unequivocally, it's not really an argument who has been more productive to this standpoint. It has been Colin Simmons. But just moving forward, I'm betting on that 6'6 frame to do a little bit more damage moving forward than someone who's 6'3. Because bad example, I mean, this exact conversation is going on right now in the NFL with people debating on Reuben Bain and David Bailey. David Bailey, more productive over the course of this past season, and he's got a little bit more length to him. Reuben Bain, he's only 6'2", 6'3". Some people are worried that his arm length might not be long enough. And if you have sub-34 inch arms, kind of like you are playing offensive tackle, they just kick inside the guard, but you're going to have to be more off ball, use more in coverage, you know, more dynamic moving your line, the formation, as opposed to just being a hand to dirt, go do your thing type of guy. So I'm a little bit apprehensive about Colin Simmons in that guard. But I don't have that concern with Dylan Stewart, and that's why he just has a little bit of an edge for me right now.
And again, it's not like you're sitting here saying Colin Simmons is a bad player. Heck, you got him as a number 5 overall player in college football. But people don't run with that. They just run with, hey, you got 4 better. You hate Texas. Why do you hate Texas?
Unfortunately, it's just that side effect of list making. You can only have one slot like that. You can't have pools of people. But like when we do these grades, they are pooled together. Like our five stars are 99s and 98s. And then people who I have top 50 players, they're usually 97s. And there's a nice little, you know, tier system I can have there. But yeah, when it comes to lists, how dare you have him over my guy, you ignorant.
Another one we could go, and this will be debated in the comments, no doubt. Number 7 and number 8. You got Kywin Lacy, Ole Miss 7, 8, Ahmad Hardy. So
exact same argument we just had, right? Ahmad Hardy, way more productive this past season, more yaks, more broken tackles, higher success rate, higher explosive run rate. But as we saw throughout the season, and I think you kind of threw that offensive line a little bit under the bus here, when they stopped producing in the middle of their schedule, and that also coincided when they had some quarterback health issues, teams were just able to hone in on Hardy a little bit more, and that offense just didn't move as well. But we saw Lacy basically have the most touchdowns in the country. That's not worth nothing. And he himself is also a very burly, hard-nosed, tackle-breaking type of person. So we just feel with how the current landscape is constructed, of course, Missouri, they've been kind of blessed playing easy schedules compared to what Ole Miss is going through. And when we mentioned there's a little bit of a stuttering when Missouri played good on good, that's why I'm giving a little bit of the leeway right now to Lacy, even though it is very much a bang-bang play, a toss-up, a matter of preference at this point in time. But both very good running backs. Don't get me wrong. Very good. Capital V-E-R-Y. Very good running backs.
Very, very good. But let me ask you, I probably should have looked this up before bringing it, but I don't consider either one of them, Lacy or Hardy, as elite pass catchers.
Oh, that is true. That is true. But end of the day, I would like my running back to be a good runner.
Well, right. But is it just kind of – 100%, I agree. But at the same time, to have two players listed as top 10 in the nation, mm-hmm. and I'm not even saying that's wrong, but – it's just, it's, again, I don't know, neither one of them really is much of a weapon as a receiver.
That is fair. And as we have mentioned, or I've written recently, explosiveness running the ball with running backs is on a 5-year decline in the land where it just means more. And if you do not have a tackle breaker like these two dudes, you're basically SOL and you're fairly mediocre. You're very easy to stop. But the gravity that they can create with the play action game is the how they can be beneficial to the pass game. So, yes, you can do empty protections. You're just having your five guys out. And do I have anything drawn up? No, I don't. I was going to hopefully have something drawn up. But when you just send five guys out on a route and you're only having your five guys block, yeah, you're going to have a little bit more of a impact catching the ball underneath as a check down outlet, really getting the defense to focus towards the line of scrimmage where you can eventually throw over their head. But it still works the same way. If you have a two deep shell and you're running under center or pistol play action like Missouri really likes to do, you'll get them to pick up, of course, the line of scrimmage. And if you have a quarterback that can throw over the top of their heads, which they have not had last few seasons, obviously there's going to be a little bit of a shortcoming there. But I think Austin Simmons there now can play off of that gravity in ways that Cook and Pribula were unable to. So they are losing Coleman, but you know, Caden Lee, he is a top 125 transfer, I believe, for us, but he's going to be a top 45 receiver coming back. He can absolutely come in and do what Coleman did in terms of being that feature type of person, moving him around the formation. Of course, that is something that Ole Miss liked to do. Of course, they had a little bit more depth at that position to where they could pick, you know, let defenses pick their poison. But I think he has that skill set. And of course, he has that rapport. I believe they're best friends, or at least they're very, very good friends. So having that camaraderie, having that chemistry from day one, absolutely is going to help them be more advantageous playing off that gravity that Ahmad Hardy has, because we know Eli Drinkwitz is going to run that outside zone scheme year in, year out. I think it's one of the highest usages they've ever had, actually, with Hardy. So they are not pulling any punches in terms of how they want to use him, but they have to be able to maximize that gravity in ways they have not this past season.
All right, and then number 10, you got Cam Coleman, now Texas receiver. How hard is he to evaluate, given that he was playing for a wannabe professional golfer, and that just the quarterback situation was just a nightmare the last 2 years on the Plains?
So, yeah, when you can see him do his thing, create catches against Vanderbilt in the end zone, yeah, not a whole lot of people can do that. So I'm not one of these people, but I absolutely hear the argument where they put more weight in true X receivers. I'm more of, again, child of the air raid. If I have a dynamic slot receiver, I have a dynamic slot receiver. I'm not going to treat him any more differently than if he was a true 6'5", 225 guy who can just dominate outside the left sideline there like Cam Coleman does. But when we see that degree of difficulty that he's been up against each of the last two seasons and still he's able to make plays and be an above average receiver in terms of yards per route run. So if you want just one number to say how efficient is a guy on a matter of pass plays called, he's still above average, despite the fact, yeah, quarterback situation, less than ideal. We know Jackson Arnold could not really read defense as well. He liked to hold on to the ball, invite pressures, invite sacks, move backwards a whole lot. When Ashton Daniels was in there, the only thing they could basically do was run spacing, which is trying to overload the underneath areas of the coverages and basically make everything an eight-yard pass. That's not necessarily how you maximize someone of Cam Coleman's skill set, but you know how you can? You put him with a play caller like Steve Sarkisian, who loves motions, who loves deception, moving guys across the formation, and a very sexy quarterback in Arch Manning. So he's absolutely going to have the best situation he's ever been in. So while there is some trepidation that it might not all come together, wide receiver is the most boomer bust position in the portal. Barron Brown, good example last year. Someone who I loved because he was one of the fastest players in college football. Well, he couldn't necessarily put it all together last year. He didn't necessarily help LSU become a more potent offense. He didn't necessarily help LSU pass the ball downfield more. So there are concerns there, but I just think because the 6'3", the ability to negate, to create opportunities, and add in a dimension that Texas lost, I mean, he's going to have a big role for them. And I just really like how he can operate. Now, where he lines up remains to be seen. Like I aforementioned, most of his damage came at that true X receiver position. So child of the air raid for me, X is your outside left receiver. You don't really move him inside or toward the right a whole lot. So if he's going to be anchored on that side and you know you're going to have to dictate double coverage to that side, Arch being a right-handed quarterback and a mobile quarterback, how much his gravity can open up things for other people. But I just think he's one of these people that absolutely demands a double team, and he can take advantage of it. And he can still, despite that, take advantage and find those wins every once in a while.
Well, I got to hand it to you, Clark, because to my knowledge, you are the original Sam Levitt truther, and you've got him as the highest rated quarterback in the Southeastern Conference, number two quarterback in the country at number 11. Tell me what you like about Levitt.
Even in a down year, Mike, so you look at his stats, yes, he did not play like QB1 like I had him this time last year. But, oh, my gosh, when I was charting him in between, you know, portal evals this past month, there was not a play, not a game in which he didn't have a play where I was just like watching a game and just saying a lot of cuss words, like how that did he do that? So we're talking about leftward rollouts where he's throwing the ball 60 yards downfield and it hits the guys in his hands multiple times. We're talking about erasing sacks from where there's people being completely clamped down in man coverage. This is where I remind you, Jordan Tyson, a likely first round pick. He himself didn't do his quarterback a whole lot of favors last year. Drops, getting clamps, this type of stuff. So when we know that, and yet he's one of these people that can elevate, erase. And here's where I will mention, at the time of his injury, Mike, he had one of the top EPA per rushes in the country as a quarterback behind, you know, let's just say an average offensive line with average weapons. So while, you know, Malik Brown did slide into that scataboo role and become that bell cow back, it was just impossible to ignore all the things that Levitt previously did and was continuously checking boxes. So, like, you know, this time last year, I was like, well, he erased twice as many sacks as he took. He had a depth-adjusted accuracy that was on kin with the guy who just won the Heisman. That's Cam Ward. And he just did that again. So that's like a plus 59% depth-adjusted accuracy that applies more weight the further the ball travels downfield. You know, I wasn't seeing like a lot of underthrows when he was throwing deep downfield. He was giving a lot of air onto the ball. So like the arm strength is there, the mobility is there. I just need to see, you know, with Lane Kiffin, oh my gosh, because like he should absolutely be on these Heisman shortlists, let alone the top five quarterback discussions lists, because he might not be 6'4". You know, he's a, I will say, average size, 6'2 type of person. But gosh, if you're looking at him and you're looking at a prime Aaron Rodgers, it's really hard to get that comp out of your head, as I have been prone to do. Obviously, that's very lofty. Some 6'2 dudes kind of don't work out despite having good years in college. J.J. McCarthy being the most recent one. He was someone at Michigan who was not necessarily the driver of the offense, but took care of business in later downs, but still relied a lot on heavy set play actions and distributing to his playmakers to basically pad his numbers. And you can maybe make that argument with Sam Levitt. I just think he's just so much more accurate. He's so much more dynamic as a playmaker with both his arms and his legs. It's just, he's really hard for me to put a good amount of quarterbacks over him at this stage. And as, again, one of the lead portal evaluators for On3, yeah, I went to bet for him and I made sure that he would remain basically a five-star or near the top of our rankings, because like, he's just chef's kiss. I love a sucker for downfield accuracy, and that's one thing he just consistently does well.
Well, number 14 should be music to Gamecock fans' ears, Clark, because we got Jacarius Peake, offensive tackle. You know, I don't even know how you evaluate, and we'll talk sellers here soon, but I don't even know how you evaluate the guy, because he's always running for his life, and he's the most pressured quarterback in college football the last 2 years. But hopefully Peake can help some of that.
Yes. Simply, yes. So South Carolina, since Beamer has been in charge, Mike, as I'm sure you've heard me say before, they've been the best damn offense in the SEC at moving backwards. And they were basically last or second to last one time, and that was because Oklahoma was so bad they had to get, you know, change everything, bring in a GM, everything. So they're consistently bad at that. And bringing someone like Peake will be a massive, massive element for this offense. Of course, offensive line, you're still only as good as your weakest link, and there could be some concerns there. But in terms of elite pass blockers, I love what Peake can offer this team. Remains to be seen how much scheme elements Kendall Briles wants to use. Are they going to do more motion-y, play-action shot stuff like they did with Josh Hoover underneath pre-snap motion-y stuff? Or are they going to do what they did with KJ Jefferson at Arkansas, which was very high in RPOs, very high on simplified reads? There were times they would run two or one-man routes and just let him decipher if the safety came down off the play fake. Okay, just take that one-on-one shot to Treylon Burks, and there you have it. Because, you know, Nick Harbor, very similar player to Treylon Burks in terms of like his physicality, his size, what he wants to do when downfield. So I'm a little bit concerned on how they're going to do here, because I think one approach is going to be better for his long-term development than others. But still, getting someone like Peake in there absolutely is an asset, because you already hinted that high pressure rate. And that leads into high sacks. So nothing against Lenore Sellers. We know he's kind of a freak athlete, but when you see that amount of pressure, and even though sacks are ultimately a quarterback stat, it's really hard to keep a very, you know, rosy bottom line when you just see that much heat, that much adversity. But I still think he sees the field. He could get better seeing the field better. I think he delivers a nice catchable ball. I think he's gotten better in that regard. But yeah, there's not a whole lot of things you can just confidently say I'm absolutely convinced he's figured it out. Of course not. But in terms of the direction he's getting someone like Peake on his blind side to solidify that, give him an extra beat or so, just so like he's not always constantly having to drop his eyes and make a play, it will be immensely important for this offense. Because again, Peake's not just a pass blocker. If he can provide a little bit more girth, and as they want to get back to that pugnacious style of running the ball like they had the first couple of years, running duo and counter and power with high efficiency and consistency, I think he absolutely can provide them asset. Because here's the other side of the coin. North Carolina State with CJ Bailey, this was an offense that did not rely on a lot of screens and RPOs, which meant true pass sets. And yet he was holding up as firm as any tackle in the country. So he wasn't just getting by, you know, balls out in 2 seconds. Okay, I didn't allow pressure. I did my job. No, he's holding up there, and he's doing it in a traditional fashion that you would want from a bona fide left tackle prospect.
Interesting. Well, what else is interesting, Clark, is you don't buy into the Heisman talk, the last name, because, again, you're not being disrespectful, but I think this is more of an accurate grade than you're going to see from other people. You got God's gift to football, Arch Manning, 15th. Why do you hate Arch?
Some would even have him a little too high. Like, how dare you have him a top 15 player? Well, like, guys, we saw it click in the back half of the season. So while they did change their offensive approach a little bit more, they did have him be more of an offensive executive. If you want to call him a game manager, you can. I will not, because he was just executing the scheme that was asked of him. But, you know, he had a high level of pressure himself. He had a high level of drops himself. And yet he was still downfield oriented. So even in the back half of the schedule, they did do a little bit more checkdowns. They did do more scheduled RPOs behind the line of scrimmage and design screens behind the line of scrimmage to give him more gimmick completions. He was still very aggressive, and he was still looking to take the top off the defense plenty. So when you look at that type of stuff, the things that obviously are a big sell to me, you know, he's a lot more mobile than his uncles were, and you have that added development in Cam Coleman. You can go outside and win against the numbers. So when you provide all that additional gravity and you bring in two legitimate running backs in Hollywood Smothers and Relique Brown, who I aforementioned basically came off his best season at Arizona State with Sam Leavitt. You have two of those guys, both of them a little bit different styles, but both are more than capable to take advantage of light boxes. And when you have those advantages, like I mentioned with Arch's legs and Cam Coleman outside the numbers, you absolutely should be able to find more damage inside that tackle box. So I just think all of the surroundings and an extra year to gel, I think this is the time for Arch Manning to really live up to his next name, to his last name, and, you know, be that next great in that lineage of quarterback.
Hey, how about this? A lot didn't go right on the Plains, but if you're not a big follower of Auburn, you probably don't know the name of Xavier Atkins, but you should. Number 16 overall player in your rankings. What do you like about Auburn's outstanding linebacker?
Super high impact rate, Mike. So when I'm doing my weekly player evaluations, it can get pretty noisy when you're trying to, you know, measure a defensive lineman against a linebacker, against a box safety, against a cover three cornerback. So you're just trying to find things that can really cut through the clutter and really, you know, matter. So one of the defensive statistics that I have loved the last few years, it's called impact rate. Pretty simple, right? On a per-play basis, how impactful are you? So pressures, defensive stops, havoc plays, all of those go into account. And on a per-play basis, Xavier Atkins was just dynamic. One of the top returning impact rates at the position. Of course, this was his first year as a starter. Now that he got out behind the Weeks brothers at LSU, he's absolutely primed to live up to his blue chip pedigree and be one of the best linebackers in the sport. And in my opinion, he's going to be Auburn's best player, bar none, even with some of those portal additions they brought in on offense. Coach Byron Brown, everyone wants to talk about him. He's one of these alien type of quarterbacks, toolsy, certainly maintaining that scheme that he had with Alec Golish the last few years. So this is going to be their fourth year together. You really think they're going to take a leap, but still, it's that linebacker who I really think is going to be making a lot of noise this fall.
I'm fired up to tell you about our new partner here, Ultra Pouches. Go check them out. TakeUltra.com, promo code THATSEC. You can see it right there on the screen, THATSEC. Get your 15% off TakeUltra.com. And what are these Ultra? They're pouches, brother. Completely nicotine free, caffeine free, but they're packed with nootropics, whatever that is. Shane and I, we can't get enough of our Ultra pouches over here. They help with mental clarity, enhance focus, give you the same kick as a nicotine patch without the side effects, if you know what I'm saying. So go check them out. Again, TakeUltra.com, promo code THATSEC to get you 15% off. And we are fired up about these Ultra pouches. So again, go over to TakeUltra.com, use that promo code THATSEC to get you 15% off for first time users. Help out the show. Let them know that we sent you over there by using that promo code THATSEC over at TakeUltra.com. There's a link in the show notes as well if you want to check them out. And there's also a link for our friends over at Brunt Workwear. Of course, they sent us over some fancy dancy boots. They said, hey, show the boots. Well, here it is. I mean, you can't get a better boot than this, can you? I mean, look at this. This thing's freaking massive. It's the size of my face over here at bruntworkwear.com. Promo code SEC to get you $10 off your order. They got your boots, apparel, what we really need right now is a cold weather gear. They got you covered. Hoodies, crew necks, waterproof boots, soft toe, composite toe, limited time only. If you go over to bruntworkwear.com, put in that promo code SEC, you get you 10 bucks off. You can't beat it. Shane likes to say, we ain't working men. We like to look like we are, though, and we look like it by going over to Brunt, bruntworkwear.com, promo code SEC to get you 10 bucks off. Can't beat it. Can't beat it with a stick. All get enamored, right, with the portal and the additions we've gotten, but I think it's vastly more important to keep players in-house, and I think that I know it was a big deal in Gainesville, but I think it's people don't realize what a big deal it is for John Sumrall to keep Jaden Baugh, who you got number 17 overall player. Run the damn ball is what they're going to be doing with John Sumrall. What do you like about Baugh?
Well, I love the wordplay. As we aforementioned with the naked gun stuff, that's just A1 stuff. But yeah, he's a tackle breaker. I love that stuff. I like backs that can change the math for the better. I don't like guys who can just run to space and fall down. Kentucky found that out the hard way with Dante Dowdle, unfortunately. I like backs, again, who can just break tackles. You have to invest two or three people per snap to make sure he cannot get through or around you, because he's capable of doing both of that. He can win the edge and he can go right down the chute through your chest for a 10-yard gain if he chooses to. So I'm curious to see what the offense will look like. Of course, Napier's scheme, very prevalent in outside zone motions and shifts, pre-snap eye candy to try and create some leverage for you. I think Sumrall is going to be a little bit more diverse in terms of what they're going to do with the run game. Of course, Buster Faulkner, you look at what he did for Georgia Tech. Oh my gosh. It wasn't necessarily a spaceship offense, but it was one of the hardest to defend because they kept playing to their guys' strengths and they kept doing enough stressor elements underneath with the quarterback run game, with at-snap motions, to where they kept presenting differing pictures as opposed to shifting both my tight ends over here. We're going to go under center. We're going to send our Z receiver in a jet motion, and we're going to do outside zone. That's basically 20% of Florida's offense, as a lot of Gator fans can attest. It's a lot more diverse. It keeps defenses a lot more in the dark, and when you do that, obviously, a lot harder to stop. So, but I just love how he can help change the math, his own gravity, and we'll see what type of quarterback Aaron Filo can be in down to down later on. But as far as, you know, being the driver of that offense, he absolutely should be that, in addition to one of the most voluminous ball carriers in the entire country.
All right. Hey, number 20, you got Caden Green, one of Oklahoma's most hated players, but one of most beloved in Missouri. What do you like about Green?
I like how he was able to kick out from left guard to left tackle and not miss a beat. He literally had week one last year, he got pushed right back into Pabrillo's lap, and I was like, oh, I guess he's not going to cut it out. Well, that was the only bad play he had the rest of this season. He really locked that crap up, and he became a bona fide bookend with Caden Trost on the other end. And it's not an accident, of course, with that outside zone scheme. You need to have elite tackles. Really hard to run outside the tackles if you can't, get that seal block around the edge there. So him on the blind side, he has that first round potential for me. Of course, former 5-star. I just really like what he can add to the table, because if you're going to have someone like Austin Simmons, who's still 20 years old, still fairly inexperienced, if you can give him an extra beat or two to let things decipher, it's going to be an immensely better product than if you're constantly, having him drop his eyes and make plays that way. So I really like what he can offer on that blind side there, as just in the run and pass game, very balanced. Again, I hate to say checks a lot of the boxes because it's cliche, but he just has the size, the speed, the technique that you desire from potential first rounders. There it goes.
Well, speaking of the suitors, highest rated suitor right here, 21, David Stone. What do you like so much about him?
Similar with Atkins, it's a high impact rate for his position. So he was a true sophomore last year, former 5-star himself, playing next to Grayson Halton, who himself finished as a top 5 tackle in our impact ratings. That was a great, great tandem on the inside there. So I think he's going to take another leap here in his third year and be a fixture on that offensive, on that defensive line. Because we know Oklahoma, they're going to lose some bodies, but bring him and Taylor Wine back. I mean, you put them on the same side. Talk about a mismatch problem. And they're going to be a consistent pain in the ass for a lot of teams. I mean, he's got that size, he's got that strength. And, you know, he's not just a Frisian horse out there occupying space, kind of like Caleb Banks likes to do. He can get off blocks and he can make plays in the backfield as well.
And we talked quite a bit about Sellers already at 23, so we could skip him. But how about 25, Marcus Ratliff from A&M? Yeah.
This could blow up in my face, but I'm going to bet on this man because he's a very stingy coverage man. So when you play safety and you're a, let's just say, a capper, you're the true back end. You want to keep everything in front of you. Sometimes you're not always picked on. Sometimes you're not always targeted just by the nature of the defensive design. Well, on a per target, on a per coverage snap basis, he is one of the best coverage men, safeties, nickelbacks, cornerbacks, regardless of where they line up, in terms of limiting that stuff. So that's very efficient. Of course, that can quickly change if people want to come after him. But in terms of playing for Mike Elko, getting another year in that system and already being super, super stingy, I like what he can provide this offense, because we can't just talk about Caleb Downs anymore. We're going to have a new safety take the reign, take the mantle, and drive the conversation. I think he's certainly worthy of it based on last year's play.
And then number 28, Prince Will, I believe on three, you guys had him as a five-star transfer, if I'm not mistaken.
You are mistaken, but he's right on that line, Mike. He's right on that line. He's one of our highest four stars. But if you've noticed, right now we only have about 26, 27 five stars. Usually we'll have 32. So he is on that short list to maybe eventually be bumped up to that five star. And we're talking about pass rush run weight, something his brother was very good at and what got me highest on him coming out of the portal a year before last. So it's in the DNA. And I mean, I think obviously Blake Baker will find ways to maximize him. He can get after the quarterback. And I hate to keep saying this, but as a child of the air raid, if you can affect the quarterback, I'm going to value you. And I definitely value him.
How much does Arch Manning value number 31, Trevor Goolsbee? I would imagine some of Arch's NIL kick it right to the tackle there.
Well, I mean, him, Goolsbee, and Sonny, so they're bringing him over from Wake Forest. They're going to kick Brandon Baker inside the guard. So those are three draftable dudes right there that have top 100 potential. But Goolsbee is going to be the highest one. He's got that blue chip potential. You know, he was that year-over-year starter. He's got the experience you want. And Sark, like we kind of mentioned with some of these other offenses, they have some proclivity to try and win outside. And it's really hard to win outside if you don't have a good tackle. Well, he's got a really good tackle on his hands. And even though he didn't have the hottest of starts, when we're looking at those true pass sets, again, those are the true dropback situations that are weaning out the screens and the RPOs, things that we know Texas likes to do, he held up as well as many, many left tackles in the country. So I really like what he can do in another year with that system and live up to his potential. Because a lot of people thought if he had come out this year, he had a chance to go in the late first round or even, you know, early second. And that would have been a little bit too rich for my blood at this point in time. But a lot of people view him highly, and it's only a matter of time before he lives up to that potential.
Hey, and how about Yak King, number 33, Mario Craver? I think I already know what you like about him.
Oh, yeah. It's just, what can you do with the ball in your hands, my man? And then when you can house a bubble screen multiple times and you make people think that Marcel Reed is a difference-making quarterback, well, you've got a hell of a receiver on your hands. And Mario Craver, I was a little bit lower on him, I'll be honest with you, Mike. You know, coming from Mississippi State, he played as a true freshman, and he was a downfield stretcher for them, kind of like exact opposite usage. But he goes to A&M, he gets a lot more easier targets, and my gosh, he can absolutely be a magician with the ball in his hands. Of course, when you have a quarterback that, let's just say, is a lot iffier in these true dropback situations and these true passing situations, to have those outlets on early downs to keep defenses from honing in on you, and you know, if you're going to be that rushing, fold, pulling, gap scheme offense that A&M has liked to do. Of course, remains to be seen how much it's going to remain with Colin Klein no longer there. I'm going to assume it's pretty much going to be the same thing. and getting the defense's attention in the box, well, you just got so much dynamicism out there, out wide. So even though KC Concepcion's no longer there, I'm really excited what Mario Craver can do with an increased role, because it's not like he was, you know, a second fiddle option. I think it was like a 1A, 1B situation, in my opinion, for them last year. So if he's going to be that 1A now, get a little bit more volume, I don't anticipate his efficiency to take a major dip. And I think he's absolutely going to be one of these all-SEC players. And if, big if, Marcel Reed can fix that accuracy concerns, and if he can be a little bit more consistent throwing downfield, that's all the better for his upside.
I want to skip down a couple, down to 47, Tre'Dez Green. You know, a lot of people love him. Yeah. I know he's had drops, have been an issue. But what do you anticipate he'll look like in a Lane Kiffin offense?
So it's really fun. So it's basically year in, year out, you don't know what to get with Lane Kiffin's tight ends. Like when he had Kennedy Eboah, he led the conference in yards per target and first down touchdown rate. And then when he gets someone like Caden Prescorn, well, he's kind of minimized and he wasn't used so much. But then he gets Daquan Wright and he's just as much as involved in the offense as people like Caden Lee and Deshaun Stribling. So it just is a matter of how they wish to use him. But in terms of creating mismatches in the red zone, or when, you know, in a third and six situations, just isolating him on one side of the formation, there's not a whole lot of tight ends that can just offer what he can. So I use this term a whole lot, but the gravity involved with him, both inside the box and out wide, cannot be dismissed, especially when you have a Charlie Weiss calling the plays and a Lane Kiffin overall influence over the whole shebang.
How about number 53? A lot of people are wondering what they're getting on Rocky Top and Chaz Coleman, the transfer from Penn State. What do you like about him?
Impact rate. I hate to sound like a broken record, Mike, but as a true freshman, his impact rate was one of the highest in the country. Of course, he didn't play as many snaps, so obviously that can be a little bit more volatile. His totals this year should come a little bit more down to earth, but it's just the ability to whip the guy in front of you, particularly in pass rush situations. So 24/7, they're slightly higher on him right now than I am. They have him as a portal five-star. I'm just not ready to say he's one of the 32 best players in college football at this point in time. This time next year, absolutely willing to have that discussion. Even, you know, by week 10, I'm willing to have that discussion. But I'm just a little bit more wait and see. I think he's going to be a bona fide star, don't get me wrong. But elite of the elite, I'm going to pump the brakes and just wait to see what he can do with a little bit more volume. But in terms of what he did as a true freshman, I mean, he's got the 6'4", 6'5", length. Jim Knowles obviously had coached him. He knows what he's getting. So you're not going to have that buffering period to learning a whole new scheme. He can just solve his problems with aggression, as Don Brown likes to say. He can just go after it, gata, and attack it from day one. And I really like what he can offer, because we've seen Tennessee get a lot of value with their pass rushers the last few years, and I think he's the next good one.
All right, how about skipping again down a few to 62, Trinidad Chambliss. Clark, did you not watch the Sugar Bowl?
I did, but okay. I also watched games before that when he was, you know, making Georgia look like middle schoolers out there. And he was like playing pure backyard ball. So, yes, it remains to be seen if he's going to win his court case outright, but if those temporary restraining orders are going to keep rolling over, I'm going to assume he's going to come back and he's going to be a difference maker absolutely for Ole Miss. Let's say if it's Deuce Knight in him. Yeah, there's going to be a little bit of a difference from that day one impact. So if he's going to be able to maintain there and stay there, even though there's a lot of deflections, a lot of people left that offense this year, he's still going to have Kywan Lacy, and he can offer dynamicism with his legs. And if I mentioned at the top of the show, if you don't have one of those dudes, it's going to be a lot harder to run the ball in the traditional manner. So I just really like the overall ingredients that are around him and how he can help elevate Ole Miss, be the best version of itself.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I know he certainly struggled – particularly early with downfield throwing.
Yeah.
So, I mean, that is, I don't know if that's something you just acquire, but.
Well, It's a matter of comfort. It's a matter of vision. It's a matter of balance. When you have these clean pockets and when you trust what you see, the whole thing comes together. But yeah, SEC defenses are a lot faster than they were in D2 playing those types of teams. So yeah, there were some early bumps and bruises without a question, but there's a reason why he's a dynamic star, and there's a reason why Ole Miss absolutely is fighting to keep him there and why they view his value so highly. So yes, he's not a perfect quarterback by any means. Do I even think that he's a future second-round pick like some thirsty people have been trying to do? Not necessarily. But we're talking about college football player rankings, and he's absolutely going to be one of the best playmakers in the sport if he gets that extra year.
Yeah, and Over at On3, you guys, you just published the top 100. I believe you did all the way to 300, right? But
technically, Mike, I ranked the top 75 at each of the 12 major positions. So you do the math how far that can go. Okay. But yeah, I do have the top 300 up on the site right now. Yes, that is accurate. Yes.
Well, let me ask you, because I'm only seeing the top 100 here. Where do you have Marcel Reed?
Okay.
Why do you hate him? And John Mateer? Because I can already tell you those fans are screaming right now.
Well, let them scream, because they scream just as much as their inaccurate quarterbacks and at me for considering them inaccurate quarterbacks. We all saw with their eyes. Yes, John Mateer broke his hand, but even before all that happened, we're talking about, again, last year's quarterback impact study. Homeboy was not a particularly accurate passer in dropback situations or even in what I like to call floor situations where you're stripping out screens, RPOs, play actions, plays outside the pocket. You're just seeing what they can do in structure. And again, you can't really point to anything. Well, you don't have any excuses left to point to. So if you can go deal in those situations, you can go deal in most situations. He was not a good dealer in those situations. Neither was Marcel Reed. So while they were obviously important cogs to that offense, there's just a little bit left to be desired in terms of being an accurate passer. Like I mentioned with Sam Levitt, spoiler alert, I like downfield passers more than anything. These guys just weren't that, despite the extra element they were able to provide with their legs. Because that's the other element, especially when you look at John Mateer as a designed runner. Wasn't that great? I mean, the offense absolutely took a step when they went empty. So five wide receivers, just, you know, no one in the backfield, and they were actually let him cook, either sending a guy in motion with a north-south split zone scheme or just a screen pass option of sort to just really pick and part, make the defense defend that 53 and a third yards sideline to sideline. Marcel Reed, I think, has a little bit more pop because he is more inclined to be asked to throw downfield more, hunt for that big play. You know, they are in third and longs, I think, a little bit more than Oklahoma on average. So do the math. They're just asking him to do that heavy lifting a little bit more. But yeah, I've just seen way too many examples of sloppy mechanics to where I just don't think it gets all that better. And previously, looking at previous examples, the way that some people have gotten better at that have just not thrown there as much. So they're more selective with their chances. And so Graham Mertz was one of these examples before his ACL injury. Of course, I was very loud telling Florida fans, hey guys, he was one of the worst throwers beyond 10 yards downfield, and he didn't throw downfield a whole lot. So, you know, that selection bias really did hurt him. But the year after that, he took even less chances downfield, but he was only really going after the ones he knew he could complete. And it was actually a pretty decent little offense for a minute before he got hurt. So If Marcel Reed can be a little bit more selective, pass up the ones he knows he can't complete, I think it'll be a little bit more effective. But just because of that overarching immense inaccuracies in basically all aspects, all breakouts, it's just really, really hard for me to view them too rosy at this point in time.
And then Clark, I believe you told me you had a breakdown of per team in the SEC with players that have made this list. So what are the SEC teams that are at the top of the list there?
For top 100 to top 300, because obviously it's going to be a little different on the math here. What do you got?
How about top 300?
Top 300. Okay. It's going to be Texas. They got 12 people inside the top 300. We mentioned some of these portal additions they brought back, of course, key retention talents. So Simmons, Goosby, these are legitimate potential first-round picks here. So they are leading the way. But you would be really surprised, I think, to know that Oklahoma is second with 10. And credit to Jim Nagy building a roster in a hurry. Of course, a lot of that's going to be on the defensive side. We already mentioned David Stone, Tyler Wine, some of those types of guys. But, oh my gosh, like they're going to have the weapons they need to win 10 games again and potentially make that SEC title game, because they have a lot of weapons at their disposal. Because if you're assuming second, or actually it would be the third year with Ben Arbuckle and Mateer together, a full healthy offseason. You know, they have a track record. Okay, that worked at Washington State. This didn't work at Oklahoma. Let's try and retool. They're not necessarily going to have to retool things on the fly midseason. They're going to have a lot more of a planned, concerted attack on how to maximize him in his last year. I mean, there's a lot to like there. But again, I'm a little bit trepidatious on that down-to-dead accuracy. But in terms of the incumbent roster, it's very, very sexy in terms of the rest of the conference. So it's like when you're looking at people like Vanderbilt and Arkansas, they only have one person each, and Vanderbilt's is a linebacker. So it's not what it was last year in terms of like that overall talent and be able to compete with people. So I'm really excited to see what Texas and Oklahoma can offer both of them this season, making noise and potentially making playoffs.
So it sounds like we're getting Red River, obviously. We'll get them in the SEC championship. And then we'll get them in the national championship. I mean, we've switched that from Bama, Georgia to Texas, to Oklahoma as the stalwarts of the SEC.
Well, Georgia's right in their neck, so it's not like they're too far behind. And when looking at like top 100 players specifically, they're like third highest in the country, third or first highest in the country. I forget. It's like six players. But yeah, I mean, and that does not include Gunnar Stockton. So if Gunnar Stockton is able to add an extra element to his game, of course, a lot of people want to call him a one-speed thrower. He can only throw fastballs. He can't really layer things or play with finesse. If he can offer that to his repertoire, in addition to how Mike Bobo likes to complement and package plays together, be that offensive executive, I think he can absolutely help elevate them. Of course, that's the other side of the coin. Nate Frazier, like if Nate Frazier runs as hard as he did that back half of the season, of course, the entire season, that is a very hard offense to stop, because like he started to emerge as a tackle breaker, unlike the first year and a half or so, he was as a complementary aspect to that offense. So again, if you can change that math for your offense, you're able to get the ball to your playmakers. I'm really excited what they can offer. Of course, they do lose some weapons out wide, but I think just having that quarterback position another year with Bobo. Again, he's also going to have a center, Drew Bobo. I mean, that's what you want. You want that connection there. So in terms of communication, seeing things, identifying things pre-snap, that absolutely can help them provide some margins, because it's not like their cupboard is bared either, like I mentioned, with six top 100 players at this point in time.
All right, Clark. Hey, last thing I wanted to ask you, I really appreciate you dropping all this knowledge on us, but any transfers that really stand out? Because you really nailed a lot of your transfers from last season. Guys that perhaps we have yet to mention here that you think are maybe going to have either a huge impact or flying under the radar for most SEC fans.
Well, flying under the radar for most SEC fans, you know, a lot of people are going to want to point out Jordan Seaton. Obviously, he's a big name. Tackle, what I just think the Siana kid, really, from Wake Forest to Texas. I don't think a lot of people know who he was or what he's all about, but it's not worth nothing when you're kicking a former five-star, four-star guy at tackle towards the inside because they just don't think he's as athletic as him. I think he's going to be a real big aspect for this Texas offense. I think Robert Woodyard, actually leaving Auburn to Missouri, is going to be an impact player. So Hosiah Trotter, you know, he was Jeremiah Trotter's son. He transferred to Missouri last year and he left early because he's going to be a draft pick. Well, I think that role is very much up in question, but Robert Woodyard, one of these very impactful linebackers, these linebackers I very much prefer, even though the momentum for linebackers is going to be more coverage driven. Obviously, as people are getting more smaller, twitchier, how can you not be a liability when teams drop back to pass? Well, at the end of the day, you still got to have to be a body in the box. You got to put the onus on the offense to move the ball. And I think he's going to be one of these absolutely day one impact players on that side of the ball. And then when you're looking at, obviously, Kentucky, they're bringing in Will Stein, his track record putting quarterbacks in the league, not worth nothing. Kenny Minchie coming from Notre Dame, they're going to go as far as he can take them. So this impact can go one or both ways, right? And we saw quarterbacks at Kentucky go, let's just say, the way you don't want in terms of portal production since the Leary era. So we know Will Stein, he likes a cerebral, decision-making, accurate underneath type of quarterback. Well, there's only a select number of those guys that fit that archetype in the portal. And once they knew they were basically going to be out of the Sam Levitt sweepstakes, they honed in on him and they closed the deal with like in a day. So we know, we think the talent is there for Minchie. We think the decision-making is there because, I mean, if Nick Anderson's going to be his best receiver, that might not be enough juice to consistently win downfield and consistently flip fields and win the explosive play battle. So that's the onus on the decision making. I think that is going to be a make or break aspect for this Kentucky offense. So even though they're going to have CJ Baxter, even though they're going to have Javonte Barnes, you know, former blue chip, I think CJ Baxter was even a five-star at that running back position, they're only going to be as good as Kenny Minchie is this season. So that's absolutely someone, if you're going to be a team that hopes to beat Kentucky, or if you're Kentucky hoping to, you know, get to six wins, he's going to be the ultimate catalyst. See that word play there?
I knew you were going to slide some Kentucky knowledge on us before you got out of here, but
I have to give some shine to my alma mater, even though I'm not necessarily impressed with the overall class. And like ESPN has them like a top 10 portal class, kind of like they were each of the last 2 years. Not that made a difference them being their overall and win total. But yeah, there's a lot of optimism in the bluegrass right now, but I'm just a little bit more of a realist in how the overall roster looks. But I'm going to be a pragmatic when it comes to the quarterback. I mean, he's there's a reason why they ID'd him. There's a reason why they think that he can do damage here. And I'm going to be optimistic until I see something to change my mind about.
All right. Well, hey, Clark, as always, we appreciate you. Before you go, can you tell our audience how to follow you and how to find all your work?
Oh, sure. I'm still as most active on X/Twitter. I'm not as, you know, stat blasty as I used to be. So people know me from way back when, like based on a weekly basis, I would share who would actually be leading the conference and all these obscure stats like yards per target and adjusted net passing yards per attempt and first down touchdown rate. I've kind of faded that back, and I've mostly strict to giving bad movie takes and football takes recently. But yeah, I still like to write articles. Like this past week, I did a study on explosive run rate and why scrambles are very, very important. So check that out. That got launched on the home site yesterday. And of course, I still operate secstatcat.com, where I still chart all these offenses on a weekly basis. So if you're interested to see how effective Georgia was running their convoy screen or how much outside zone Missouri focus, you can actually see that and how effective it was compared to the rest of the conference. A whole lot of information for casuals and diehards alike at secstatcat.com. So a whole bunch of stuff. And, you know, I'm trying to do a little bit more academic-y, deep divey type of articles like that explosive run study with the changing offseason schedule here. Cause like, you know, being in charge of the portal, well, that's over with. I don't have to look for another window. So just changing the modus operandi at this time of year. It's going to be really fun. It's going to be really interesting. Of course, I'm also very ravenous to get started on my quarterback charting session. So that's my impact study I do every summer. Basically the top 40 or 50 quarterbacks, I'm charting them against their hardest opponents. So the poop states of the world don't have that much of an influence on the statistics. And we can just look at good on good and who ultimately can now help elevate a team. Because I've done this last 3 or 4 years. And quite frankly, the kids who end up in my top 15 have a very, very solid record for getting drafted. I mentioned Fernando Mendoza. He made our top 15 last year. We were actually highest on him in the portal last year. So we're looking at people like that in that range, like Darian Mensah, who could make that leap and potentially become a Heisman type of quarterback. So I love this type of stuff. And if you're a football nerd, I think I would recommend you follow me. But, you know, what's that old saying? You can leave a horse to water him and not make him drink. Well, football fans are even more stubborn, Mike, as we kind of hinted at, like, how dare you have that guy higher than me on this subjective list? It's just, you know, I love it. I love people care. And if you care, I'm the man for you to deliver all this fun information, allow you to digest it and have you a little bit more informed. Because if you are a little bit more informed, I'd like to think that your bets would have a little bit better of a hit rate. But that's just me.
You'll have to let us know when you get your quarterback study in and come back on to rank and outrage these fans.
Absolutely. Some of them are already done. Like I mentioned, Sam Levitt, Byron Brown, some of those are already out there. And I'm going to withhold my charting notes until everyone's done. Just so like it's not going to be like I'm picking or, you know, making fun of this guy or really going after them. I'm just going to present with you all the past charts and the past profiles on Twitter. They're there to view. So I've already shared some SECers who have transferred, like those two quarterbacks. So if you are interested in that stuff, just go ahead and check it out. And I promise you it'll be more detailed than any other past chart you have seen before. So very informative, very detailed. And again, it helps you give you a better idea of how these guys like to attack the field and how they like to, operate on a down to down basis.
Thanks again, Clark. And I will let you go so you can jump right back into the film room there for you.
Well, I'll be careful with the ice still on the ground, but I will absolutely take it. I appreciate you as always, Mike. I hope you have a good one.